Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
July 10th, 2007, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, self-timer tricks. Welcome back to another episode of The Digital Story. We're going to cover a little camera technique today, but before I do that, I'd actually like to talk about last month's photo assignment, before and after. As you may recall, the June photo assignment was fairly simple in concept, but it had very interesting results. The concept was, of course, that you would take a picture right out of your camera, and that would be the first shot that you send in. And then the second shot would be that same picture, but edited the way that you liked. And it could be creative editing to do something, you know, very artistic, or it could be just image editing to get it to where you wanted for a print or to put on a website or anything like that. I've posted the gallery online. You can go take a look at it today at www.thedigitalstory.com. If it's not on the front page still, of course, you can always go to the Jump to pop-up menu that's in the upper right-hand corner and just select photo assignment. And not only can you get the last photo assignment, but you can get all of the photo assignments from the past. One of the first things that I noticed when I was looking at all the shots that were submitted was that the before shots, the shots that, you know, were the raw shots right out of the camera, were pretty good. And that I thought that was kind of cool, because to me that meant that for the most part, the people that participated are capturing well. And I think that's so very important. It's so very important to get the best shot that you can when you take the picture, because it leaves all of your options open later on. And I thought that this photo assignment, I mean, there's all sorts of interesting things about this photo assignment that I enjoy. But one of them is seeing how good capture was for people that submitted. And that's very encouraging to me, because I just sort of feel like, yes, you know, yes, the compositions were good and strong. And yes, the exposures were well done. And yes, the white balance was looking good. And I find that very exciting. And this was regardless if we were using a compact camera all the way up to very expensive digital SLRs. And we had everything in this photo assignment. So I thought that was very cool. So number one thing that I wanted to mention about the June photo assignment is that the capture's looking good. The capture's looking really good, and I find that quite exciting. When we moved into editing, or the second shot on the photo assignment, there were two basic things going on that I noticed. The first one was, of course, folks that really wanted to do something different with the image. They wanted to just take it to a completely different place. And I thought those were pretty well executed, and I found them on the whole very, very interesting. Then the other camp was, of course, they wanted to take the original shot and just make it look better, make it look printable, or make it look postable on a website. And I thought, for the most part, those went really well too. Now, one thing that I noticed, because I'm reviewing all of these on a calibrated monitor, is that I don't think everyone out there in our virtual camera club has calibrated their screens. And that was one of the things I wanted to bring up. Now, of course, it's always hard to tell when I'm looking at an edited shot what the intent is. And so sometimes, you know, you always have to take into account people's taste. And I think that's great. But as I compare the edited shots to the shots that were originally captured, the originally captured shots often look like the white balance and everything was correct. In other words, the camera, you know, they got it right in the camera. And then some of the editing decisions that I saw led me to believe that some of the monitors out there might not be calibrated all the way. And I think that's something that I just wanted to note. It's very important for image editing to have your monitor calibrated. And then if you're printing, of course, as we've talked about in other episodes, to make sure then that you use ICC profiles for the paper that you have in your printer, and then that creates a nice workflow. But this is also true, the screen calibration is also true when you're sharing pictures electronically. You want to make sure that your monitor is calibrated so that you can trust those edits that you make to the picture. Now, these are subtle things that I'm talking about, of course, but I think it bears discussing right now. And so when you go and look at the photo assignment, the June photo assignment, and look at the before and afters, and really spend some time with this, because I think it's really interesting, the choices that people make. And I think it's interesting to help you think about the choices that you make when you're image editing. Sometimes some of the images will be a little bit on the flat side, and they really get bumped up in editing, even to the point where the shadow areas might really plug up or the highlights might really blow out. I mean, really like that kind of real buffy sort of contrast sort of thing. A lot of color enhancement, I saw a lot of saturation going on. But really think about what is your look for image editing, and maybe even thinking in terms, if you're an older photographer, one who has had a lot of film experience, what film was the film that you liked to use? Was the film that gave you the look that you wanted? And then what can you do today to sort of, you know, continue that, to sort of go along those lines? Were you a Velvia shooter that just liked everything really crazy and punchy and contrasty and saturated? Or were you on the other end, a Kodachrome shooter that really liked more subdued colors, more what we call natural type colors? It's a very interesting thing to think about as you go about your image editing. And I think looking at the June photo assignment will help you even think about that in more detail. And I think it's really worth spending a little time there. The July photo assignment is pattern. And this photo assignment has a lot of potential too. And I've talked a little bit about it in the previous podcast. Just one thing that I want to mention, and I mentioned this before, was that pattern is very interesting to the human eye. People love looking at images that have pattern. And then people also are attracted to images that have pattern where it is interrupted somewhere. You know, that one chair that's turned the other way in a row of chairs, a kind of concept. So as you're thinking about this month's photo assignment, and as you're out walking around and just have your eye out, remember, pattern is interesting, and sometimes interrupted pattern is even more interesting. And I'm really looking forward to the shots that will come in for July. So that's it on the photo assignment side of things. It's just very interesting right now, and I love looking at the contributed shots. I want to thank everyone who submitted to the June photo assignment especially. It was a lot of work, and we had a good turnout, and I just really appreciate the effort that every one of you put in. I enjoyed looking at your shots, and I enjoyed publishing them. And just know that you're helping thousands of other people who look at this thing. You're helping them think about their photography too. So your contributions are duly noted here. Now, I just want to mention really quickly about grab shots, and remember to keep sending them in. Very important part of the digital story. I like to run at least one a week, and I really enjoy the day that I get to post a grab shot. And I want to thank our sponsors, Boinks Software, the maker of Photo Magico, the best slideshow software in the world, and also the good folks over at ExpoDisc, who make the ExpoDisc, which is the easiest and I think really the best way to use the custom white balance function on your camera to get accurate color at capture. Okay, I want to talk about the self-timer for a moment. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is I've been teaching a lot lately. I have a couple courses going on with the local JC, and I've been teaching at some conferences and so forth. And it's very interesting. The self-timer seems to be one of the overlooked features on almost every camera, and is a feature that it is on every camera. Even camera phones on the whole have self-timers. So this is something that we have access to, but we forget about it. And there are a lot of situations where they come in very handy. And I just wanted to review those for a moment, if for no other reason, to raise that feature up, you know, in your mind, so that when you're out shooting, oh yeah, I could use the self-timer for this. Because the self-timer, the bottom line on the self-timer is it helps us get sharp shots. And sharp shots, a lot of times, are the name of the game. And what I mean by that, shots that don't have camera shake. Now, of course, you usually find your self-timer somewhere where the drive options are. And this is especially true on compact cameras. You'll have burst mode, which has the multiple frames icon. You have single shot mode, which just has a single frame icon. And then a lot of times you'll have self-timer right there too, which is the kind of the circle with a line halfway through it, like a clock kind of. And self-timer is the thing that you use, of course, when you want to have a delay from the time that you press the shutter button. Now, a lot of compact cameras these days, I know that my little Canon compact that I use gives you the option even of setting how long that delay can be. The standard delay is 10 seconds. And the reason for that is that's about how long it takes for you to press the shutter and then dash over to that group of people that you're taking a picture of, get your position in, and then smile right before the camera goes off. I guess they've done some research way long time ago, and they figured, yeah, that takes about 10 seconds. It must have been really interesting to watch that research going on. And, you know, okay, well, here we go. Oh, I got in by 9 seconds. Oh, that was 11 seconds. Oh, I fell on the way of 13. Oh, my gosh. But anyway, 10 seconds is the standard self-timer length of time, and I think that is just because of the old group shot thing, and that is how the self-timer is used most often. People set the camera down somewhere, they put on a tripod, they focus on the group of people, they press the button, and then they dash over there and get in the shot. But the self-timer can also be used as a substitute for what we used to call a cable release, and I think what is called more often today a remote release. But the cable release of yesteryear, it was a pretty cool device. It was like a plunger. It was like a cable with a plunger on one end, and you screwed it in to this little threaded opening at the top of your shutter, and then you could actually press the plunger, and it would release the camera. The idea being that when you have the camera on a tripod or, you know, set on a table or something, if you push the shutter directly with your finger, you'll jar the camera at the moment of exposure and therefore probably cause a little camera shake, even though you have it steadied on a tripod or on a table or on a ledge, whatever you happen to be using at that moment. So by having a cable between your finger, your heavy, clunky finger, and that delicate shutter button, then you could release the shutter without jarring the camera. That was the idea behind the cable release. And we still have cabled remote releases today. They tend to be more of an electronic nature, where you're not actually having a plunger push a mechanical shutter, but you press a button and it creates a little electrical contact with wherever it's plugged into the camera, which trips the shutter electronically. And they're very nice, but you know what? They're just like also another thing to carry in the camera bag. And a lot of times you just don't have space for it, or you forget it, or even if you have it, you know, it gets pushed down to the bottom and you forget to use the darn thing. So one of the advantages to having electronic shutters is that you can have remote releases that don't have wires. They use infrared most of the time. And I have one of these for my Digital Rebel, and I just love it. It's a little remote control, and Canon on this one did a really clever thing. They made a little holder for it that actually fits on your camera strap, and so this thing isn't very big. And so you can actually have your remote release clipped to your camera strap so that you always have it. Even if you just grab your camera and run out the door, the little remote release is right there on your strap. It's very handy. And what I like about it, in addition that it's very light and easy to use, then I also have the option of tripping the shutter right away. So I press the release and the shutter goes right away. Or I can have a delay of 2 seconds or 10 seconds with the remote release. So I have some options. And I really like the 2-second one, again, when I have the camera mounted on a tripod or on a ledge or something, because I press the release, the mirror flies up, and then 2 seconds later, the camera takes the picture, so that even the vibration from the mirror coming up on the camera has had a chance to settle down for a couple seconds, so that when the camera takes the shot, it is a nice sharp shot with absolutely no camera shake whatsoever. Not only have I not touched the camera, plunged the shutter with my big clunky finger, but even the mirror has gone up and the camera has settled down after that, thereby getting a rock steady shot. So I've gotten to the point, because these remote releases or the self-timer, either way, are so easy to use, that I try to use either one, either the self-timer or the remote release, whenever I have the camera mounted on the tripod or somewhere on a ledge or whatever I'm using. Because if you're going to the trouble to do that, if you're going to the trouble to steady your camera, why not go all the way? Instead of mounting your camera on the tripod and then, poking at it with your finger, why not mount your camera on the tripod? And if you can, using a self-timer is not always practical, especially if you're trying to time the shot perfectly. Even that 2-second delay, someone will walk into your shot right as the shutter goes off, and you curse under your breath and pull your hair out and go, oh man, I just, wasted a digital image. And then you have to, do it all over again. So yes, you have my empathy. That can be, very infuriating. But for the most part, most of the time when we're using a steadied camera, that 2 seconds or even the 10 seconds for the self-timer is worth the trade-off of getting the most sharpness possible. So I try to use either one of those, a remote release or the self-timer, every time I mount the camera on any sort of tripod. And it's just a good practice to get into. Now, another thing that you can do that a lot of people don't think of is that when you're doing handheld photography and you're in a very low light situation, so you have the ISO pushed up a little bit, you're shooting at the widest aperture possible, and you still got a pretty slow shutter speed. You're still down there at 1/8 of a second or 1/4 of a second, kind of the willy-nilly land, as I call it. You just don't know what's going to, how's it going to turn out. You know that you're really pushing the envelope. Well, something that you can do when you're in that situation is first lean up against something solid. I think that really helps. So put your weight up against a wall or a pillar or something, a tree, something where, you can lean up against something solid. That will help you steady the camera. And then the second thing is use the self-timer, and especially if you have that 2-second mode, because what you can do then is you lean up against the steady surface, you press the shutter, and then you just hold the camera as steady as you can. The self-timer goes dun, dun, if you got the 2-second one, and then it will go off. So then you don't even have the movement of your hand pressing the shutter button causing maybe camera shake with those long shutter speeds. So the self-timer, as useful as it is when the camera is mounted, it's also useful for handheld photography, and especially in low light situations when you want that camera as absolutely steady as possible when you're hand holding it. Some cameras have additional self-timer functionality, and if yours is one of these, I think they're really worth looking into. One combination that works nice is auto bracketing with a self-timer in continuous mode, so that it will rip off, you use a self-timer, it's steadied, and it will rip off 3 exposures or 5 exposures depending on, what camera you have. And it'll go boom, boom, boom like that, and at the same time do the auto bracketing all with the self-timer on. That's really kind of handy and a good use of, those different functions. So if your camera has that, take a look at how to set it up and give it a try, because I think, again, maximum sharpness for all of your shots in that sequence. Another trick that I like for cameras that will fire off multiple frames in self-timer mode is to use them for group shots, and including group shots that I'm in. Because what it does then is that, so you set it to 10 seconds because you're probably going to be dashing over there to get in the shot. But instead of taking just one shot, it will take three shots. And I think that's helpful because that helps you battle that thing where someone blinks or someone looks away. So by capturing three frames at once instead of just one on group shots, you up your odds of getting a good group shot. Now, always with people shots, I encourage you to do that a couple times, right? Don't just set up the group shot, go get in there, even if it's firing off three frames, and say, okay, that's fun. You've gone to all the trouble to set up the shot and the camera, make people stand there and do it, you know, two or three times. Then that way, you know, you'll get a good shot. You'll get a shot with everyone's eyes open and smiling and get the shot that you want to share. Okay, well, I think my self-timer just went off, so it's time for me to go. Remember, this month's photo assignment is pattern. Send in those grab shots. Don't forget about our Flickr member page, our public group page. It's a lot of fun. You know, it's Flickr/thedigitalstory/group. And go over there, and you can always get to it by when you're at The Digital Story, www.thedigitalstory.com. We also have a member gallery. The link is right there on the homepage. You can't miss it. It's right under the banner there at top. You can go over there. You can look at the current shots that have been submitted to the Flickr group, and you can go directly over to the Flickr group. We have discussions and stuff going on over there. It's a lot of fun. Join in if one of the discussions interests you. Feel free to join in and feel free to upload your pictures to the member group page. It's terrific. So anyway, go out, take some pictures, remember pattern, and I will see you here next week. Thanks now. Bye-bye.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.